The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngman for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'm going to be reading articles from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter and also I'm going to continue reading from the Harvard Health Letter, their supplement about COVID-19 vaccination. And I'm going to start by finishing up the article that I was reading from last time, which was a special report from the Mayo Clinic entitled Live Younger, Live Longer. And this was written by Dr. Stephen Kopecky, a cardiologist at the Mayo Clinic. The first thing I want to do is to read a attached page entitled Slow Change is Permanent Change. Americans spend a lot of money to lose a lot of precious time treating chronic illness. But wouldn't it be better if illness could be prevented in the first place? Wouldn't it make more sense to invest in living better now so you can continue to live better later? It would be really great if we all could make major lifestyle changes with a little willpower and a flip of the switch. But we might as well be honest, that expectation isn't logical or reasonable. Worse, it sets us up for disappointment and reinforces the negative mindset many of us have about our ability to change. When we set big goals for ourselves, it requires sudden, drastic changes, an austere diet, an intense fitness plan, or a dramatic sleep program. We might be able to maintain the change for a little while, but these extreme behaviors don't become enduring habits. In moments of stress or exhaustion, we quickly regress to our old habits, which often come coupled with a feeling of failure that discourages us from returning to our earlier goals. What does failure teach us? When it comes to change, we often think, go big or go home. And if we fail, so what? Just try again. But our brains are sneaky in the way they work, and this mindset may actually work against us. There is a tiny primitive part of the brain called the habenula. It's like the negative reward or failure center of the brain, and is known for its role in shaping behavior based on past failures and disappointments. There is a reason humans evolved to have a center like this in the brain. A million years ago, a human climbed a tree to get some food, but fell and broke a leg. The brain subconsciously remembers the pain of that failure, and it plays a big role in preventing us from doing things that lead to experiencing repeated pain. The habenula tries to protect us from future failures by inhibiting us, sometimes even physically. What if, on the other hand, climbing that tree resulted in finding delicious fruit to eat? That success is ingrained in the memory. Previous success motivates us to repeat the successful action. How does this feature of our brains impact us now? If we try to make a change but fail, the habenula records that failure. The next time we try to repeat the activity, our habenulas deter us in a subtle way. On the other hand, if we try to do something we've been successful at before, the memory of that first success enhances our chances of success the next time. When we try to make big changes and fail, our next attempt is likely to be less successful. Unfortunately, many of us try the same change over and over again, only to reinforce the failure memory in the habenula. It's much better to register tiny successes than big failures in our path toward change. Once we understand this part of the brain, we can make sure the habenula works for us rather than against us. Know your why, what, and how. Successful change begins with powerful motivation, which is different from willpower. Ask yourself, why do I want to lose weight? Why should I get more exercise? Really think about it. Get clear about your motivation. This is the single most important factor because it helps you with the seemingly insignificant decisions you make hundreds of times per day. Once you know why you want to make healthy changes in your life, the next step is to decide what you're going to do to make this happen. Focus on your habits. We do routine things without too much thought because our brains want to conserve energy, and a habit's the easiest way to do it. So changing a habit is the best way to change your lifestyle. The how of changing habits is where many of us get stuck. We tend to set vast, lofty goals that sound good on paper. We'll lose 50 pounds, train for a marathon, or master meditation. The problem with these big goals is that they're often unrealistic. We end up failing and feeling defeated, something our habenulas are bound to remember. Instead, it's important to break the how into manageable micro steps. You should set small goals. No goal is too small. For many years, I've been trying to get one of my patients to start exercising on his treadmill, but he could never bring himself to make it a habit. Finally, at one office visit, I suggested he start with a very small goal. Stand on the treadmill for 5 minutes each day. He agreed. 6 weeks later, at a follow-up visit, I asked how it went. To my surprise, he revealed he had begun walking on the treadmill 30 minutes a day. He figured that since he was standing there already, he might as well start walking. That one small initial step blossomed into a healthy habit after years of resistance. Be specific. A good goal is not only realistic, but also specific. The smaller and more detailed, the better. If you want to improve your diet, you might start by adding a single slice of apple to your breakfast each morning. Try to link a tiny change to something you already do. Make it fun. As much as possible, try to choose a new habit you want to add to your life, rather than something you feel you should do. Start with the ones you think will give you some joy or pleasure, even if the good feeling mainly comes from a sense of accomplishment. This reward can help stimulate the dopamine release that helps form the habit memory. The more you actually enjoy what you're doing, the more likely you are to stick with it. I also wanted to finish up what I was talking about earlier in the same article, where the author, Dr. Stephen Kopecky from the Mayo Clinic, was talking about retirement. Dr. Kopecky went on to say, "It's important to think of retirement as moving to a new life of promise, adventure, and purpose. You're given the opportunity to pursue activities that fill your soul instead of your time card. And you have the freedom to take action, whether that means building meaningful relationships, exploring creativity, or diving deeper into an interest you've always had. Maybe you find meaning in helping an older neighbor take care of her house, or in babysitting a grandchild. Maybe you mentor a child, a teen, or a young adult, or volunteer with an organization you love. Whatever it is, find that purpose in your life. Find your why. Why you want to wake up in the morning, and what do you want to do with every new day? But most importantly, your why will give you energy when you need it to change your small habits, and that will lead to a healthier you. This is your time to focus on what's truly important to you and how you're going to make the most of this next chapter of your life. After I had my second cancer, I found great comfort in focusing on every day as if it might be my last. Sometimes I would think, what if I were on a plane that was going to crash? How would I focus my last moments? Then I would do just that. Knowing that you have the power to change your life, from the way you eat, move, and sleep, to the way you cope with stress and connect with others. None of us is going to check out of this world alive. But if you live with purpose and meaning and practice gratitude, optimism, and happiness, you're going to live your fullest and most rewarding life. Dr. Kopecky has written a book called Live Younger, Longer, 6 Steps to Prevent Heart Disease, Cancer, and Alzheimer's, which was published by the Mayo Clinic Press and is available at mcpress.mayoclinic.org. Now I'm going to go back to the discussion from the Harvard Health letter about COVID-19 vaccines. And I'm going to talk a little bit about possible side effects of vaccines. The first question that was asked is, what is the connection between the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine and Guillain-Barré syndrome? In July 2021, the FDA warned that the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine may lead to a small but increased risk of Guillain-Barré syndrome. Guillain-Barré syndrome is a disorder in which the body destroys its own nerve cells. It can lead to muscle weakness and sometimes paralysis, trouble breathing, or even death. The risk of developing Guillain-Barré syndrome after receiving the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is very, very low, and the benefits of vaccination still far outweigh the risks. The FDA's warning was based on preliminary reports of 100 cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome that occurred in people who had received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. To date, about 12.8 million people in the United States have gotten the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and most of the reported cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome occurred in men aged 50 and older, about 2 weeks after the vaccination. Just about all of them required hospitalization because Guillain-Barré syndrome can affect the nerves to chest muscles and the diaphragm, making it difficult to breathe. Most of them recovered completely within a few months, but some never regained their full strength. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience any of the following symptoms after receiving the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine. And those symptoms are weakness or tingling sensation, especially in the legs or arms, that's worsening and spreading to other parts of the body. Difficulty walking. Difficulty with facial movement, including speaking, chewing, or swallowing. Double vision or inability to move the eyes. And difficulty with bladder control or bowel function. The next question is, why did the FDA and CDC recommend temporarily pausing the use of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine earlier in 2021. In April of 2021, the FDA and CDC jointly recommended pausing the use of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine until the agencies could review the cases of rare but serious type of blood clot that were reported in 6 women who received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. On April 23rd, FDA and CDC recommended lifting the pause and allowing the use of the vaccine to resume. They made this decision after their medical and scientific teams examined the data and determined that the vaccine's known and potential benefits greatly outweighed its known and potential risks. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is once again available for use in the United States for anyone age 18 and older. But the vaccine's label and fact sheet now warns of the rare risk of developing blood clots in vessels in the brain, abdomen, and legs, along with low levels of blood platelets. This combination is referred to as thrombosis and thrombocytopenia syndrome, or TTS, an abbreviation of the medical terms for the two conditions. The label and fact sheet also lists symptoms of TTS and urges anyone who experiences them after receiving the Johnson & Johnson vaccine to seek immediate medical attention. 8 million doses of the one-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine have been given since it was authorized. Only 15 cases of TTS were reported through April 23rd, and all of them were in women between the ages of 18 and 59. They occurred from 6 to 15 days after the vaccination. While the risk of experiencing a blood clot after vaccination is very, very low, anybody who experiences the following symptoms within 3 weeks of receiving the Johnson & Johnson vaccine should contact their doctor and seek medical care. And those symptoms are severe headache, backache, blurred vision, fainting, seizures, severe pain in your abdomen or stomach, severe pain in your chest, leg swelling, shortness of breath, tiny red spots on the skin, or new or easy bruising or bleeding. COVID vaccine that is available only in Europe, made by AstraZeneca, also rarely is associated with these blood clots. The next question is, how have the vaccines performed in the real world? In a study published in MMWR in September of 2021, the CDC reported that even after Delta became the dominant COVID variant in the United States, full vaccination has effectively prevented COVID hospitalization and death. That study looked at 600,000 cases of COVID in 13 locations across the United States between April and July 2021. Compared to people who were not vaccinated, those who were fully vaccinated were 5 times less likely to become infected, 10 times less likely to be hospitalized, and 11 times less likely to die of COVID. The effectiveness of vaccine protection against infection fell after Delta became the dominant variant in the United States. But vaccination continued to effectively protect against COVID-related hospitalization and death. In an earlier MMWR study in April 2021, the CDC reported that people who received both doses of either the Pfizer vaccine or the Moderna vaccine, in other words, the mRNA vaccines, were 90% less likely to get infected with COVID than people who were not vaccinated. In clinical trials, the vaccines were 95% Pfizer and 94% Moderna effective. Several viral variants were circulating during this study period, but this April study preceded the rise of the Delta variant. What about, does the COVID vaccine effectively protect older adults in the real world? Well, two reports have been published in MMWR in September 2021, and they found that vaccine protection has declined in older adults. But vaccinated older adults still enjoy significant protection compared to older adults who are not vaccinated. One report describes the results of a study looking at the effectiveness of the COVID vaccines, specifically the Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson vaccines, in preventing COVID-related hospitalization at 5 Veterans Affairs medical centers in the United States. It found that the vaccines were 80% effective in preventing hospitalization in people aged 66 and older, whereas they were 95% effective in preventing hospitalizations in people aged 18 to 65. The vaccines were found to be 89% effective at preventing COVID-related hospitalization in people aged 18 to 74, and 76% in people aged 75 and older. So they were definitely less effective in those 75 and older. A small study conducted earlier in 2021 by the CDC and published in MMWR reported that the two mRNA vaccines, in other words, the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine, were as effective in older adults in the real world as they were in the clinical trials that led to authorization of their use. That study found that full vaccination reduced the risk of COVID-related hospitalization by 94%, specifically 95% among those who received the Pfizer vaccine and 94% in those who received the Moderna vaccine. It looks like the reason why the vaccines have declined in effectiveness is the Delta variant, but the numbers still strongly support vaccine efficacy even during the period of the Delta variant dominance. So why are some people hesitant about getting the vaccine? Well, it's natural to want to make an informed decision about the COVID-19 vaccine. Fortunately, the safety of the vaccine seen in the clinical trials has been verified by the real-world results. And in August 2021, the FDA granted full approval to the Pfizer COVID-19 mRNA vaccine for use in people 16 and older. The transition from emergency use authorization to full licensure was based on additional data and longer follow-up showing that the vaccine met certain safety, effectiveness, and manufacturing quality standards. Has the vaccine been developed at warped speed? Yes, the speed with which the COVID-19 vaccines were developed was incredibly fast, but the science and technology to make it happen came after decades of research. Although the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines are new, scientists have been studying mRNA for many years. The vaccines cannot change your DNA. The mRNA sends a message to the body's cells to make a specific protein, not a virus, that stimulates the immune system to give you protection. Experts predict that most vaccines in the future will use the mRNA technology. So I think it's worth repeating that the vaccines cannot change your DNA, and the vaccines cannot introduce a virus into your system. Some communities, particularly communities of color, may have historical reasons to doubt the healthcare system. But these communities have also been among the hardest hit by this pandemic, and like all of us, have a lot to gain from vaccination. The Black Women's Health Imperative is a national organization dedicated to improving the health and wellness of Black women and girls. And they developed a short video talking about the importance of getting the vaccine. I'm vaccinated, so what can I do now? Fully vaccinated people can participate in most indoor and outdoor activities without a mask and without physical distancing. But in July 2021, the CDC advised all people, including those who are fully vaccinated, to wear masks in public indoor places in areas of the country with substantial or high transmission of the virus. And you always need to follow federal, state, tribal, and local laws and workplace or business requirements about mask wearing and physical distancing. For people who are not fully vaccinated, the CDC continues to recommend mask wearing and other preventive measures in some outdoor settings as well as indoor settings. Question. I am pregnant and plan to eventually breastfeed my baby. Is it safe for me to get a COVID-19 vaccine? In September 2021, the CDC strongly recommended that women who are pregnant, thinking about becoming pregnant, or recently pregnant, including those who are breastfeeding, should get vaccinated against COVID-19. The American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology and the Society for Maternal-Fetal Medicine also agree that all pregnant and breastfeeding individuals should be vaccinated. The World Health Organization recommends the use of the COVID-19 vaccine in pregnant women when the benefit to an individual outweighs the potential vaccine risks. Experts, including the WHO, believe it is most likely safe to get a COVID-19 vaccine if you're breastfeeding. Similar to any decision regarding any medication or supplement during pregnancy, your doctor should advise you based on your personal health risks and preference. Although the actual risk of severe COVID-19 illness and death among pregnant individuals is very low, it's higher when compared to non-pregnant individuals from the same age group. In addition, COVID-19 increases the risk for premature birth and possibly also for other undesirable pregnancy outcomes. Transmission of the virus from mother to baby during pregnancy is possible, but seems to occur rarely. The CDC's stronger recommendation followed safety data released in August 2021. The study enrolled 2,500 women who received a COVID-19 vaccine before becoming pregnant or during the first 20 weeks of pregnancy and found they did not have an increased risk of miscarriage. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. I certainly think that the COVID vaccination is an important topic. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I sure hope you enjoyed it.